This is Stephanie Nelson, host of the Pivotal People Podcast. We have great conversations with all kinds of interesting people who are making a difference in the world. Follow us and leave a review if you like this episode so that more people can find us. Thanks for listening. I would like to welcome singer-songwriter Tyson Motzenbacher to the Pivotal People Podcast. He has come out with a great book. It's a memoir called Where the Waves Turn Back, chronicling a transformative 40-day pilgrimage along the California coastline. It's a very compelling, poignant story. It talks about his 40-day, 600-mile trip. Do the math on that. That's an average of 15 miles a day. About 10 years ago, he did it in 2013 for a very special reason. So Tyson, welcome. I'd love to hear a little bit, tell everyone a little about who you are and what really compelled you to set out on this journey.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. It's great to chat with you. It started with my mother, who was who got sick with cancer when I was in my mid early 20s. And she was just a hero of mine in many, many ways. When she was getting more sick, she kind of like called me aside and said that she said that she wanted me to do something dumb and irresponsible after she was gone, which I think is funny because it's like the least motherly advice ever. And she said, yeah, like she basically said, when I'm gone, I want you to do something irresponsible. And while you're doing that irresponsible thing, I want you to think about why you're sad that I'm gone. And I asked her like what sort of irresponsible thing I should do. And she was like, I don't know, you do irresponsible stuff all the time. Just pick something.
What a great mother. No wonder you were so close.
Yeah, we were very close. And so the thing I ended up picking was the backstory also is that my mom was a very adventurous person. She was like a long distance cyclist. So when she was 20, she rode her bicycle from Seattle to Boston by herself.
Wow.
And then when she was a little bit older, she rode all the way across the outback in Australia. So she was kind of a person that was like, I joke in the book that my family has a higher threshold for risk than most families. So that kind of like was part of the thing. I think it's just this idea of like breaking away from your routine and allowing the disruption in your life to kind of like enter into yourself. So the thing that I picked was to walk. There's an old pilgrim's road in California that's called the El Camino Real. And it was built by the Franciscan monks from Spain, specifically this guy named Father Junipero Serra. And he's a very complicated figure these days. There's a lot of things, you know, history is a complicated matter, but he did build these missions and this beautiful road along the California coast. So I decided to just walk that. And I don't think anyone's done it in over, you know, at least 100 years, probably a lot more than that, because it's all just freeways now. So it's not a very nice place to walk most of the time, but it had a good story and it was doing the irresponsible thing that I needed to do. So that's what the book is about.
Well, what I appreciated about it, I'm a walker. Okay. Mm-hmm. 15 miles is a super long distance. I walked 5 miles, 15 miles, but you did it 40 days in a row. And you were in pain from like the first couple of days. Well, okay. If anyone's going to attempt this, by the way, go get a really good pair of shoes.
Yeah, that's a good start. Yeah.
Tyson, well, to be fair, you left just 3 days after your mother's funeral.
It's true. I did. Yeah. So her funeral was on Saturday and then I left on Monday. So yeah, it was a quick turnaround.
Any of us who have lost, I always say there's a special club of people who've lost a mother.
Right.
You know, you can't understand it until it happens. And I know there's all kinds of different grief. Your book chronicles really a couple of things that I took lots of notes. First, what happens to us when we clear our mind of our daily clutter and start observing the world? You had 40 days of nothing but walking, number one. And number two, really understanding grief and looking at the world through your grief. And you also questioned your faith. You know, what is this all about? So the whole book, you feel like you're walking with Tyson, and we have all walked through these kinds of things before. What I appreciate is you just didn't present the problem. You really took us through your thoughts and came really to a beautiful conclusion. It's taken you a long time to write this book.
Yeah, it has. And it's hard. I think it's hard to set out to write a book like this. It was something that I kind of avoided for a long time because I didn't feel like I had any really very satisfactory answers from it. You know, like people want to know, like, well, what did you learn and how did you change and all those things? And it felt like to me, I think that a lot of it was like discovering the ways that I needed to change and discovering the answers that were still kind of instead of discovering answers, it was discovering better questions or more answerable questions, you know? So yeah, I think, and that's something when I talk about the book, it's like, well, what are the answers? Like, well, there's not really very good answers to like, why did this person that you love pass away or whatever.
When your mother passed away, you were in your mm-hmm. early 20s. Where were you in your life right then? Like, you obviously interrupted your life for 40 days and went off and did this. What was going on?
Yeah. So I'm a touring songwriter. So I'd been touring for probably like only at that point, maybe like three or 4 years at that point. But it was a very busy season of my life. Like, I was on the road, sometimes like 200-300 days a year. So I was just gone out playing, and I was playing in other people's bands and trying to kind of like make a way for myself in the world. And in some ways, like, I think I was like kind of avoiding the situation in my life, which is that my mom was sick. And she actually even told me one time, she's like, you know, it feels like she told me, she's like, I know that you're avoiding this pain and this pain that is like me being sick, but it feels like you're avoiding me, which was, my mom was really good at like kind of vocalizing the ways that like she needed to be seen in those. It's so hard because, you know, like at the end of the day, my mom was the one that needed to be cared for. But like all mothers, like she was still caring for us the whole time and helping us through it, which is just like so much to ask of someone that's going through such a difficult time. But she still did that, which is one of the things I admire about her so much. I think that towards the end of it, when I really realized like this is real, this is actually like a finality. Like, I always sort of thought maybe she'd just get better if I didn't think about it. And it became apparent that she wasn't going to get better. And it was this realization that like partly that just like life is so fleeting and short, and things are moving quickly, and we only have the people that we love for so long. And that was one of the reasons why I just sort of realized how important it was going to be for me to reorient my life around things that really mattered to me, like specifically people. And so that 40 days, I mean, you know, it wasn't hard to do because everybody knew, for one thing, like my mom was sick, so we didn't know how long she was going to be in those final days for. So my life was already kind of like totally on pause. And I kind of just like extended that. I was just like, I'm, you know, I paused it for her for now. And I'm going to, after that, I'm going to pause it for me. So yeah, it was 40 days of like, I think everybody just kind of like left me alone. They're like, Tyson's doing his thing. I guess like, you know, there's a lot going on with his mom. And I kind of just like completely ejected from my life. And it was a very good decision.
It's interesting. I'm sitting here thinking, it's probably not that hard for any of us to really just pause our life. We all mm-hmm. think everything we're doing is so important. But you were able to pause it. Would you recommend to people that they take 40 days and pause their life and go do something? You call it irresponsible. I feel like it's super responsible because in your early 20s, you got reoriented around what really mattered.
Right. Yeah. I have no end of like a lot. Some of the feedback on this book is just people being like, man, what an unbelievable, like who actually has the bandwidth in their life to do something like this. And the fact of the matter is that not very many people do. And I was in a very unique position, which is that I was single and I was young and I was already really poor. So I didn't have a lot of like for me to exist in the world didn't cost very much. So like I didn't have to pay for it really. Like it was just like, I could kind of just leave my life and just do something else. And there wasn't a lot of, there wasn't a lot of like recoil for that.
That's interesting.
At the time it did feel like there was a lot of recoil. Like I remember feeling like, you know, it's so funny to look back on it because you only have context for like the life that you have. So like, you know, I was going into debt to do that walk, but it wasn't really very much debt at the time. It felt like a lot. So it did feel like it cost something. I think it always feels like whenever you leave your life, like it feels like it costs something. But the main thing that I would say is that like, I don't think that most people, including like, I couldn't do it now. There's no way I could just like eject from my life for over a month and do that now. But I do think that you can make a point to like earmark your life in ways where you leave it and look at it from a distance. And also to doing it as a, like if you've lost someone, which was the case for me, to do it as a tribute to that person, I think is really cool. Like, I have a friend who just lost his brother, and his brother really liked mountain biking. And so my friend would just ride his mountain bike as hard as he could. Like he'd take a whole day every week for a month. And he just did that every week for a month. And it was his tribute to his brother. And it was, I guess, like, just the main thing that I would want to say is that I think we just get like so zoomed in and obsessed with the minutia of our life that we forget how precious time is and like how important these big things are, and just allowing ourselves to have margin for these bigger points of meaning is important.
That is a great way to say it. And, you know, this book is such a tribute to your mother. I said, I mean, this was not your intention that this would be a book that mothers would want to read. I have sons who were the age you were when your mother died. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, I would love it if my sons ever wrote anything like this. I mean, you included just some really sweet, kind of funny things your mother said. I'm always mm-hmm. afraid of what my sons will quote, you know, oh my gosh, what did yeah. I say? But there were a couple of things you said in your book that anyone who's experienced grief could relate to. This one, this is how you just nailed it. So much of the loss I was feeling was embodied in the tragedy that nothing seemed to have changed for anyone else. The world continued to spin. The people went on with their lives, and the very foundation of the earth had cracked under my feet. And mm-hmm. isn't that how anyone who has lost someone feels? It's like you're in this weird, surreal space and everyone keeps going. And for, you know, a little while, people say, I'm sorry for your loss. Mm-hmm. And then you're supposed to be over it. And I don't know. I mean, it took me a solid year to
get
close to normal after my mother died. So, but you were so intentional. You're like, you know what? I'm going to put life on pause. I'm not going to fake it. I'm not going to go around saying, oh, I'm fine. And what I loved in this, and I think what I hear you saying is you don't have to take 40 days out of your life to experience what I'm about to describe to you, mm-hmm. what Tyson experienced, but in our own lives, we can. So for example, you talked about how you had nothing else you had to do. The only thing you had to do was walk 15 miles a day. And as time went on, you said, maybe boredom is the test you have to pass. It's the road to enlightenment. You have to be bored until you aren't bored anymore. And then everything becomes more vivid.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. Like, could we just still our brains enough? Like when you're going on a walk, we're supposed to be noticing the trees, but I'm just like spinning minutiae in my head. Like,
yeah.
Stop the minutiae. Like,
well, it takes time to override that. I mean, that was the case for me. It took like, and in some ways, like even in the book, like when I read back, like I read the audiobook for it like a few months ago, and I was reading back over it, and I was like, I realized that it was well, probably, you know, a third or halfway through this trip until like anything started to work at all. It was just before that, it was just like what you're saying. I was just being my normal self, except I was just like grinding along the road every day. And it takes time to like break. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, these pathways that we've built for ourselves and the way we think through things and the way we notice things and the way that we like that, you know, like that our fears and hopes are overriding the things that we're seeing, you know, it takes time to like allow those voices to be quiet and to find what's on the other side of yeah. Like you basically just summarized my book in the best way that I could say it, which is that I started out wanting to be understood and I wanted people to see how sad I was and what I had lost. And by the end of it, like there's this beautiful word that's sonder, S-O-N-D-E-R. And it's basically what it means is that it's this realization that everyone is having the same complex experience that you're having. And it's a funny thing to realize, like, in some ways I'm just a lit window in someone else's life, you know, like they're driving past a lit window and that's their experience of me. And I think that one of the reasons why this walk was so important to me was that like, the more that I was exposed to other people's worlds and lives and sort of the flurry of humanity, and then also allowing that to quiet within me, I just realized like, it's tragic that they don't know what I'm going through. And it's tragic that I don't know what they're going through. And it's kind of this, there's a line in the book that I think about, which is like the one thing that we have in common is that we're all hurtling through space at an incredible rate towards a singular destination. And the thing that unifies us is that it hurts the whole way down for everybody, you know?
Well, you met some people. So what also just struck me, oh my gosh, is how easy it is for us. You just nailed it in what you said. How easy it is for us to think we understand other people based on their outward appearance, mm-hmm. and how we really have no idea what people are going through. So on the one hand, you met some people who anyone would look at and say, oh, they're homeless and grungy and who knows what their story is, but we will look away. And then you, from your, you know, responsible life, you became a little bit dirty because we're not going to talk about your hygiene, but you started to look like a vagabond, right?
Yeah.
And you started, tell us what that felt like, how people looked at you.
Yeah, it felt like, you know, there's these layers to society that I don't think that we really recognize when you're sort of living in the top layer, which is a sort of, and it's so funny that like, kind of as you look like people that you normally wouldn't look like, you're actually like, you kind of are given a whole new perspective into their lives and their worlds. And they actually talk to you differently. And the way that they respond to you changes. And that was really, really beautiful, was like being able to basically see like these people that normally would be invisible to me, or that I would be sort of a specific symbol to them, now we're the same. And now mm-hmm. we can talk to each other like we're the same, because we are the same, but like there's these invisible barriers between us. And some of the most insightful things that I learned on the walk were from people that normally I wouldn't have talked to at all. Yeah, there's one character called Francis in the book who was kind of the turning point in some of my faith questions. He's a Native American who had lost his whole family and had been hitchhiking around the country for a few years. He was really young. And he kind of like just reoriented this thing of basically what he said was like, I asked him why God didn't save my mom. And he said, basically, like, he was like, well, I think he did save your mom. And then he said, I think you're the one that needs to be saved. And it was this reorienting of like what it means to be saved, really, like to be helped by God, that like maybe there are different ways you can be saved than the way that I thought. And it was because it was from someone that really knew suffering and really knew how bad and how far down the bottom could be. And he just got a Gideon Bible from this shelter in San Francisco. And he was like reading this Bible and it said it saved his life. So it was amazing reorientation for me.
Wow. So when people are considering whether or not they should donate money to have Bibles distributed at shelters, you just don't know what that could do. You had so many phrases that I just held on to. You said it this one several times in your book. And this is like, you encountered Francis, you got to know him. You have to read the book because it's really a beautiful story. But you'd never saw him again, right?
So yeah, I never
you
saw
said
him again.
Over and over again in the book, life is full of meetings and partings.
Yeah. You know? I love that you caught on that. That's actually, it's a quote from The Muppets Christmas Carol, which is a book I used to watch with my family as a kid.
Oh.
Yeah, Miss Piggy says it. She says, or maybe Kermit the Frog says it. And it's when Tiny Tim dies and he says, life is full of meetings and partings. And then Miss Piggy says, that is the way of it. And it was a joke between my mom and I, like we would quote that movie to each other all the time. And so at the end of it, it was like, that was kind of the final sort of tagline from this movie that we loved was, life is full of meetings and partings. Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted.
Oh, wow.
Go on.
Yeah. Wow. And I didn't even know back to the grief piece, because I'm sure mm-hmm. there are people listening to this who are either in the middle of grief or they're terrified of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, those of us, before I lost my mother, I was terrified of losing my mother. How in the world could you survive that? And it's what we talked about, it being surreal. But you ended the book by saying this, and I loved it. You were talking about your family and everyone. The worst had happened and we were okay. Oh my gosh, that one got me. And we were okay. And then you wrote this book and it's speaking to so many people. Your mother is so proud of you. I will tell you that right now. I will tell you, if my sons ever wrote anything like this. And so this was 10 years ago that you did this walk. So tell me, how do you feel like that experience? It's 10 years later. Do you feel like you have carried what you learned from that into your daily life now? Has it changed your life?
Yeah, it has, definitely. And it's also like, it's a place that I, you know, I think that type of like discipline slowing down is something you can't really recreate. And it's something that I'm like kind of envious of my previous self for. It's like, there are times when I know that I'm still missing things. It was like, I sort of thought that like, if I could train myself to see the world the way that I was when I was just walking all day, every day, it would be a richer experience. And I think it would be a richer experience, but you know, you can't just walk along the side of the highway all for your whole life. And so I think that it's one of those things where this realization that like, the door was kind of opened to a new way of looking at the world. And even when I didn't look at it all the way, I knew that you could, you know, I knew that you could look at the world that way. And I knew that you could experience a slowed down, like less chaotic pace, and that you could, like, you know, lean into the harder parts of life and the realization that, you know, the most beautiful things are mundane if you look at them long enough and you realize that. So those are pieces that, like, even if I'm not practicing it every day, I remember that you can.
Mm. And so you talked about your faith in your book. How did this whole walk impact your faith? Because you were pretty honest. I mean,
yeah. A lot of it's, you know, in fact, a lot of the feedback from this book is people, especially Christians, reading this book and being like, this is a very confusing book for me. Go ahead.
If we don't ask questions, then I wonder if our faith is really authentic.
Yeah. And it's not the kind of book you would normally read in a Christian space to be like, this, you know, this is what you do. This is how you find the thing. And these are the steps. And because for me, it was the opposite of that. It was like the shaking up of all of that kind of thinking. And I think, like, one of the best way that I can describe how my mind changed, I have a friend who's a mathematician, and he one time explained, I was trying to put words to the way that my perspective changed. And in some ways, I think I have a more vibrant faith than I ever have after that, although it shook it all up and a lot of things got left behind in that process. I think what it is it's this, like, my friend who's the mathematician, he says that, he told me one time, he was like, you know, the math exists whether or not we know how to access the math. Like, basically the point is that, like, 1 + 1 = 2, whether or not you know what a number 1 and what a number 2 looks like and what a plus sign and what an equal sign looks like, that's always going to be the case. 1 + 1 is going to equal 2, whether or not we know how to communicate that or how to access that. And, you know, math is extraordinarily complex. There's, like, these algorithms that we can use to access the math, right? And he's like, but it exists whether or not we have those, we have those formulas and those numbers and those symbols and these ways of accessing it. And he was basically like, you know, and I realized, like, oh my gosh, that's how God is. Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, that was my realization, was that, like, my whole life, I sort of thought that God was the plus sign and God was the formula and God was the numbers. And it's like, no, we have a lot of really beautiful ways of accessing God. And I think that, you know, I have opinions about some of those things being, you know, objectively true, like capital T true. But at the end of the day, like, God exists whether or not we have any way of accessing him or we have any, you know, any of these formulas and these ways through to find him. Like, he's well beyond that. And I think that, like, there's this sort of mystery and wonder that is opened to you when you realize that, like, I'm just kind of doing my best and God is enormous and infinite and beyond time and understanding. And that exists whether or not I know how to find him in this moment.
I love that. That is your highlight reel on social media. That was so beautiful. This whole book is so beautiful. So I think that it's available. Tell us where it's available. And also tell us about your music. Tell us where people can find your music and tell us what your music is about.
Yeah. Thank you for asking about that. The book is available everywhere. It's on Amazon and it's at your local bookstore probably. And it's at Barnes & Noble and it's on my website, which is tysonmotzenbacher.com. And yeah, you should be able to, it's also, there's e-readers and there are, like, you could get it on a Kindle and you can get an audiobook, which I read, which is cool. Yeah. And I have a number of records out and some of them deal a lot with these types of questions and things, especially my first record and my third record, which is called, the first one's called Letters to Lost Loves, which is actually one that I wrote during this walk. It's kind of what started the whole thing for me. So I wrote a bunch of the songs on the walk. And then the other one is called Someday I'll Make It All Up to You. And that one has some stuff about a lot of these questions as well. They're kind of folk records, a little bit rock and roll. And you can buy those online as well or at my website.
Okay.
And I also play lots of shows and stuff. So I'm probably coming to a town nearby in the future. So you can find all that stuff online as well.
I'm going to put all of that in the show notes. And I have to tell you, I saw in your bio that you have played the Ryman Auditorium three times.
Three times, yeah.
How cool was that?
Oh, that was, are you based in Nashville?
I've been there. I'm based in Atlanta, but we've been to amazing. The Ryman Auditorium. It's so cool.
That one's a life changer. Yeah, that one's amazing. The first time I played there, especially, it was like, it felt like, that was one of the most intimidating stages ever. Like, you walk out there, it's this old, beautiful church in downtown Nashville. It was the original Grand Ole Opry. Mm-hmm. Just everybody's playing, you know, Bob Dylan and Neil Young and Paul McCartney and everybody's played there. So it's like, just kind of amazing to play the stage that all your heroes have been on.
Yeah. I mean, it's the, I guess, amazing acoustics. So all you have to do is say, hey, the guy has played the Ryman Auditorium 3 times. That's not a coincidence. So he's the real deal. But you're also a beautiful author. And this is a great book. I don't know if there's going to be more books, but I don't know if there's going to be more walks.
Yeah. Won't be more walks, at least to this extent, but I hope to be a walker like you forever. So
there you go. Five miles is good. It's great to talk to you. Thanks so much. And I will put all his information in our show notes.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me on. It was really lovely to talk to you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening today. We hope you're inspired. And if you like the episode, please take a moment to go to your podcast platform and follow us and leave a review so more people can find us. Now go out and be the pivotal person that you are.